Today, through the assimilation of truth and love, given in the writings of Mary Baker Eddy, faith becomes understanding, which makes the power of truth and love available to us in our consciousness. We can know that we possess sovereign power through this scientific understanding. Teaching, not personality, important. If there was one thing Mrs. Eddy impressed upon the students more than any other, it was that they were not to look at her or to her, but to the truth she declared. The spiritually minded, honest students were not bothered with the question of Mrs. Eddy's personality. To them it seemed simple common sense that she could not be separated from the truth she taught, as she herself explained. Christian Science is my only ideal, and the individual and his ideal can never be severed, unquote. An article in the Christian Science Journal stated, "As to those who antagonize bitterly the position and doctrines of the author of Science and Health, is not the trouble with her personality the same that mortal mind has always had with the personalities of those chosen of God to voice truth? How would it strike us to hear a professed Christian say, 'Oh, yes, the Sermon on the Mount is of transcendent elevation and beauty, but Jesus was selfish, conceited, and aspiring,'" unquote. In this business of personality, or the mentioning of her name, she had to watch two ways. She, from time to time, wrote her editor requesting there be less mention of her personally. But at the same time, she was keenly aware that a recognition of her relationship to Christian Science as its discoverer and founder must be kept before the public to safeguard it against wily aspirants who would not hesitate to adulterate and pervert her teaching. There were always those who, having gained a smattering of metaphysics, felt themselves capable of expounding and even improving on what had unfolded to her through many years of hard work, study, experience, revelation, and self-discipline. These instant metaphysicians argued that their allegiance was to truth, not to a person. Of course, that argument was founded on the would-be metaphysician's extravagant and excessive regard for himself, for his own person, since centuries will probably still elapse before anyone can speak with the authority of Jesus or of Mrs. Eddy. Thus she had to watch both ways in order to properly safeguard her teaching. However, she warned that those who looked for her in person or elsewhere than in her writings lost her instead of found her, and that religions and philosophies are lost when their divine principle is sunk in personality. No one ever made less of personality than did Mrs. Eddy. Mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love spoke through her because they could, because of her unselfed love and purity. They could speak through her because her absolute consecration of thought, energy, and desire had made her a transparency for truth and love, a clear, lucid windowpane that truth and love could shine through. She at all times let her writings speak for her, knowing they were of God, that she was a scribe under orders, whom God was using to lead humanity out of the chaos of blind faith and false beliefs into the demonstrable understanding of science and Christianity. It was Mrs. Eddy's mission to state the science that would enable all to do what Jesus did. It was not easy for her students to grasp it. Carolyn Frame voiced their dilemma, quote, "We endeavored to remember every word, but when we tried to express it, found this impossible. Neither could we write it, showing it to be the spirit and not the words, letter that make the impression," unquote. Speaking on this subject with Mrs. Eddy, James Gilman ventured, quote, "Doubtless we try to explain the letter too much." "No," she said, "you do not explain the letter even, unless you are governed by wisdom. if you are talking with one who has not learned the ABCs and trying to explain what is above and beyond the ABCs, do you explain anything to such? No, we need to practice this science in whatever we are doing, and this gives us the wisdom to talk to people what they can understand. She told him he must abide on the rock. Starting the teaching. In February of 1866, Mrs. Eddy was the only Christian Scientist on Earth. The vast subject of Christian Science was then known only to her, and was utterly contrary to the general belief. Thus it had to win admission little by little. To accommodate her teachings to the total ignorance of her early students, Mrs. Eddy in the beginning had been willing to give up a tiny portion of her ideals in order to secure the larger part. This led to trouble. Perfection is our present state in reality, and always has been. But to one born of the flesh, the attainment of perfection seems a step-by-lonely-step gradual climb, journeying uphill all the way. In spite of temporarily accommodating herself to the ignorance of that early period, it is clear that Mrs. Eddy never lost sight of her goal of perfection. Error begins with first student. We have already learned that Hiram Crafts was Mrs. Eddy's first student in the late 1866. He did not tell Mrs. Eddy he had used manipulation, rubbing the head, when he was a spiritualist to heal her, prior to studying with her. When she learned of it, she determined it would be best to suffer it to be so now with him and with other students while they were learning. It was all so new. She would let the tares and wheat grow side by side until she could see more clearly how to deal with the problem. The answer came swiftly when she found, to her horror and sorrow, that only evil could come from trying to mix spirit and matter, trying to mix purely spiritual means with material means. Thereafter, manipulation of any kind was strictly forbidden. Some of the students refused to obey Mrs. Eddy's newly imposed strict ruling against manipulation. Kennedy was the most obdurate offender. He had achieved astonishing success with his method, and was totally averse to risking his lucrative practice by reliance on the purely spiritual means of prayer alone. Mrs. Eddy finally became fully aware that behind Kennedy's surface inoffensiveness lay a deep hatred of truth, the carnal mind's enmity against God. She saw Kennedy's control of his patient's mind, and all such control of one mind by another, as a dangerous counterfeit of science, it being the imposition of the operator's will rather than the actualization of God's will. It was the ancient struggle of self-will against the will of love. She had taught him the tremendous power of mind, and now she felt she had put a dangerous weapon into his hands, as well as into the hands of her other students, whose characters were dominated by evil traits. While Kennedy was the most inexorable troublemaker, he was at the same time the Judas that was necessary to bring out the great truth that because God or mind is all, is infinite, and spirit or good only, evil, in all its guises, is simply illusion, animal magnetism. Totally unreal, and our only need, ever, is to rouse ourselves out of this Adam dream that matter as substance is a reality. Since the kingdom of heaven is within consciousness, we need only rouse the dormant understanding in order to free ourselves from its claims. Kennedy subsequently became the symbol for the belief in more than one mind. The desertions and further apostasy Kennedy was maneuvering caused the first edition of Science and Health to be written under extremely adverse outward conditions, confirming the scripture regarding the woman who, being with child, cried, travailing in birth, and pain to be delivered. But as she later wrote, the very circumstance which your suffering sense deems wrathful and afflictive, love can make an angel entertained unawares. And this was true now. It was actually Kennedy's refusal to obey Mrs. Eddy's instructions that convinced her of the necessity to publish her writings in book form, instead of giving out only handwritten manuscripts of her teaching. The depth of suffering into which the conduct of these rebellious students plunged her may be gathered from letters written to Bancroft during this period. Quote, "My students have done me irreparable injury, while I have been doing all in my power under the circumstances for them. When I suffer for truth, they desert me. And when I send out their name, endorsed by myself, they disgrace my recommendation by a failure or turning to mesmerism and working against me. Why is all this? It is because they have not started with right motives. They told me their motives were right, and I tried to help them. But because they love the ties of the flesh more than those of the spirit, and always hold to the fleshly ties, if in any way they conflict with the ties of spirit, they fail in the healing work." Again referring to the grievous burden the discords of that hour imposed upon her, she wrote him, "I am a fish out of water. When I am dragged away from wisdom and love into the grosser abyss of folly and hate, then I am not a fish at home. Truth is, I am so tried by the malice of my students that up to this time, or a little prior to it, I have done nothing but love and praise, that I am losing my happiness and consequently my health in the dark labyrinth into which I gaze and stand upon the brink, thinking momentarily, will my students plunge therein? Many were the sleepless nights Mrs. Eddy passed as she prayed for guidance during these crisis-ridden years. In a letter to a friend, she wrote, "Oh, I am so tired, tired. When will my rest come?" Unquote. Actually, it would not come for nearly another 4 decades. She had embarked on a mission to make evil and discord obsolete. Ceaseless toil was in the offing. A great leader must do the things he believes must be done at the time they must be done. There was always something that must be done and done now. Mrs. Eddy had a remarkable talent for putting first things first. A great purpose must be carried out, and regarding it she wrote, "The song of Christian Science is work, 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 watch and pray." Unquote. Records of an experience Mrs. Eddy passed through at this period indicate how ceaselessly she strove to benefit and bless humanity with her discovery. Her willingness to give the last full measure of devotion, even if it took her life, is a monument to the human spirit. Mrs. Eddy was boarding with Miss Rawson at the time of this occurrence. George Barry and Mr. Hastings went to call on her. Rapping on the door, they heard a voice, hardly above a whisper, say, "Come in." On entering, she arose to meet them, but fell back, lost consciousness, and to their belief was gathering herself on the other side. Barry hastily went after Mrs. Rice, whom Mrs. Eddy taught the Christ-healing method. Immediately a change took place. Quote, "Mrs. Rice called loudly, as for someone afar off, and the answer came, faintly at first, and stronger, till she was able to sit up and have the Bible and her manuscripts read to her, and so recovered." This is an extract from a letter from George Barry to Bancroft. Decision to write a book. In 1872, the pupils had only her handwritten manuscripts to study from, and it was while she was deeply concerned about the harassing trivialities, the intermittent squalls of scandal, and the constant turmoil the rebellious Kennedy was fomenting, that Mrs. Eddy providentially opened her Bible to Isaiah 38, quote, "Now go, write it before them in a table, and note it in a book, that it may be for time to come for ever and ever." She recognized it as a command direct from God, and began at once to make preparation to follow the divine order. This was February 1872. More than 3.5 years years of indefatigable labor would elapse before the first edition of Science and Health finally rolled from the press on October 30th, 1875. During those years, Mrs. Eddy secluded herself, had only the barest necessities of life as she worked on her book, the little book prophesied by Jesus to St. John in Revelation 10. Bancroft, in whose home part of the book was written, has left us this record. I have known her when nearly crushed with sorrow, but she wrote on. I have known her when friend after friend deserted her, but she wrote on. I have seen student after student bring ridicule and reproach upon her, but still she wrote on. Unquote. Doubtless she little dreamed as she worked on that first edition that nearly four decades and more than 430 editions later would find her still working to perfect the system she denominated Christian Science. No regular classes were held between 1872 and 1875. The writing of her book, which she at first called Science of Life, until learning that was the title of a book by natural scientist, was the first demand. For the project she had embarked upon, she needed peace and quiet, but these seemed to elude her. During the writing, she moved from boarding house to boarding house, finding it necessary to change at least 8 times. She lived a while with Dorcas Rawson, then moved back to the Clarks, for 6 months with the Bancrofts, 6 months with the Allens, for shorter periods at other places. Each place seemed to have its drawbacks. Too many intrusions, cramped quarters, noise, intolerance of her ideas. One difficulty or another drove her in search of more tranquility. Of this experience she later wrote, "At first I hurled truth into human consciousness, but this caused me to be cast out of my different abodes in the early days. I learned this is not the way of presenting truth. You learn by the things you suffer." Slowly the value of Jesus' injunction bore down upon her. Quote, "Neither cast ye your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under feet and turn again to rend you." Publishers twice reject first edition. Mrs. Eddy assumed she had completed her writing in the fall of 1873. But 2 more years were to elapse before the book was printed and issued. When her first manuscript was offered to a publisher, it was rejected with such caustic criticism that she felt she must revise it. This took many months of work. Many changes were made. Some statements were more fully explained, others omitted. She again offered the book to the publisher in the spring of 1874. It was again rejected. The publisher said they would not attempt to print something they couldn't understand. According to records left, she was very sad at this second rejection, and her pupils felt a grave injustice had been done to their teacher's book. After discussions with the publishers concerning their objections, and further rewriting, a fund was subscribed by Mrs. Eddy's students. In July, Mrs. Eddy found a printer, W. F. Brown of Boston, who was willing to undertake the work if Mrs. Eddy would pay all the costs and would supervise it. So Mr. Brown began the printing process. There is a saying, quote, "Nothing is more aggravating than the well-meaning person who uses no judgment." This could apply to Mr. Brown. Totally unfamiliar with Mrs. Eddy's terminology and capitalization, which he couldn't understand, he decided Mrs. Eddy must have made mistakes and undertook to correct them, which in some cases fatally altered her meaning. After nearly 3 years of incessant labor, Mrs. Eddy now had to become proofreader to rectify the printing errors, or the precious volume would be spoiled. She had to go over the 400 pages and write the many blunders the printer had made, either through well-meaning corrections or pure carelessness. The plates were of the old-fashioned type, so she had to count the letters of every word removed or inserted in making corrections. A letter written to a friend concerning this proofreading ordeal ended with, tired to death, broken down with persecution, no home to rest in, invalids all around me, one room only, etc., etc., to work in. This is my present lot. But you see, I have no chance now to help myself or anybody else. But as always, she knew God was only testing her loyalty to principle. At a certain point, Mr. Brown stopped printing altogether for several months. After a time, Mrs. Eddy saw this further delay as providential. She became aware of an imperative divine demand to include the handling of error's murderous contradictions of truth in this very first edition. In Retrospection and Introspection, Mrs. Eddy gives an account of her obedience to love's prompting and its reward. And right here, as we learn of God's insistence that she expose mental malpractice, alias animal magnetism, in the very first edition, we get the clue as to why 431 editions had to follow that first edition. Through the treacherous conduct of Kennedy and other early students, Mrs. Eddy saw a way must be found to expose and nullify error's lethal contradiction of truth. A way must be found to lead the students step by step to see error's unreality, in order for truth to become divinely subjective in reality, and not just in words. Error would like nothing better than to have everyone think, "Oh yes, I am God's perfect child now," and so put each one to sleep. In Unity of Good, Mrs. Eddy tells us that evil comes into authority through the following three misstatements. First, the Lord created it. This is mortal mind saying, "I am God's idea," when actually it is the mortal mind that is God's opposite and must be dropped, laid down, overcome, seen as a misconception. Second, the Lord knows it. But God is of purer eyes than to behold evil, and knows it not. Third, I am afraid of it. All the while the mortal is saying, "I am perfect now." Personal sense underlies that assertion. Error, personal sense, takes truth and subverts its meaning. For example, applies it to God's opposite. Thus it is not founded on reality, and therefore results in fear. So it was that Mrs. Eddy obeyed God's demand to begin exposing animal magnetism, personal sense, in this very first edition of Science and Health. And once again, she passed the greatest test of courage, to meet defeat without losing heart. She always looked for the hidden blessing in a disappointment, and saw how it was invariably a call to lay down the mortal viewpoint. This filled her life with constant and unexpected encouragement, because each day she did her best to reach the highest standard of pure and useful living. It was about this time that she discovered The Science of Life was the title of a book already in print. She waited several weeks for another title to come from God. The hallowed suggestion came in the silence of the night, and she rose and recorded Science and Health. God, the author of Science and Health. Mrs. Eddy never claimed any personal human authorship of Science and Health. She said, "When you read this book, you will hear the voice of God speaking to you. It is life, truth, and love speaking to you. Only God could have written the textbook." Thus was fulfilled Jesus' promise and prophecy of the little book, the Comforter, when he said, "Howbeit, when he, the Spirit of truth, is come, he will guide you into all truth. For he shall not speak of himself, but whatsoever he shall hear, that shall he speak." Unquote. Repeatedly, Mrs. Eddy emphasized that not one word of Science and Health was the product of her own thought or invention. She had written down what she heard, what God dictated. Therefore, the words of Science and Health, they are spirit, and they are life. In the same way, any idea we practice in the system of Christian Science must be seen as not human thought or invention. It is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love, or infinite good itself in operation. A momentous year. The epochal year of 1875 held unparalleled significance in Mrs. Eddy's life. It saw the fulfilling of Jesus' revelation to St. John concerning the little book. Another happy event of considerable moment was the purchase of No. 8 Broad Street in Lynn. A mansion? No. But for Mrs. Eddy, a mundane wonder of the much-needed kind. It was to give her the peace and seclusion she needed, and to her cause it would give a prestige which until then it had not acquired. It gave a stimulus to her work, and to that of the students who were assisting her in every way they could. It was purchased in March of 1875. Mrs. Eddy had been thinking for some months that with financial help from her students, she would like to establish a home for Christian Scientists. When a for sale sign appeared on the house across the street from her boarding house, she considered it a providential disposition of events, and No. 8 Broad Street was promptly purchased. Soon there was a sign over the door, Christian Scientists' Home. It is sometimes mistakenly thought that Mrs. Eddy wrote Science and Health in this new Lynn home at No. 8 Broad Street, in the little attic room with its skylight. But the fact is the writing of Science and Health had been completed previously. The third and final drafts of the manuscript were actually turned over to Mr. Brown on September 5th, 1874, 7 months before the purchase of No. 8 Broad Street. Only the completing was therefore done at the new home. And, of course, the second and third editions were written at No. 8 Broad Street. Great activity followed the final completion of the Science and Health manuscript. The students met with Mrs. Eddy during the week as well as on Sundays. The summer of 1875, while Science and Health was being printed, was the most harmonious period of the 12 years Mrs. Eddy lived in Lynn, records Bancroft. She seemed continuously happy. Although she was constantly and diligently writing, teaching, preaching, and taking cases students had failed to heal, her physical and mental vigor were clearly augmented rather than depleted. When her book appeared late in the fall, it received more favorable consideration from the press than the students had expected. The good publicity which Mrs. Eddy's preaching and healing had generated prepared the way for her book. Mrs. Eddy would henceforth have held a highly regarded place in the community had it not been for the malicious actions of some of her renegade students. Dr. Asa G. Eddy. In 1876, Asa G. Eddy came into Mrs. Eddy's life as a student. On January 1st, 1877, he became her husband and associate in her work. He first visited Mrs. Eddy in March, 1876, at the urging of friends. Quickly healed of heart trouble, he became an earnest student, took her 3 weeks' course on divine metaphysics, and became the first person to advertise himself as a Christian Scientist. Before this, other students had advertised under the titles such as S. P. Bancroft, Scientific Physician, Gives No Medicine, or simply Dr. H. S. Crafts, will say hesitatingly, I can cure you, etc. Dr. Eddy soon realized that heaven could be experienced here and now in proportion to his grasp of reality, since it was all a state of consciousness. With characteristic honesty and courage, he totally committed himself to helping Mrs. Eddy in every way possible, including his successful healing practice. It was a spiritual marriage. They loved each other dearly. Mrs. Eddy's deep and abiding affection for Dr. Eddy is voiced in her first two poems and miscellaneous writings, written after his death, in which she voiced her prayer to have him, quote, stay till the storms are o'er, the cold blasts done, the rain of heaven begun, and love thee evermore. Faith, hope, and tears, triune above the sod, find peace in God, and one eternal noon, unquote. The marriage was a leading from God and would help Mrs. Eddy weather the savage onslaught destined to surface during the next 5 years.